Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about some pushback from Tesla on a media report. We've also got updated information out of China, some news on batteries, and a few other items as well. Tesla stock was down again today 1.1% to close at $237.01, the NASDAQ up 0.7% on the day. We didn't see the same distribution of gains in the NASDAQ that we saw yesterday with mega caps underperforming. It was a little bit more mixed today. Tesla and Google down, but the rest of the bigger market cap companies were up. Before market open today, as we talked about, the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, report for November was released, largely in line with expectations, as we can see recap from Bloomberg here. Year-over-year was up 3.1% in line with expectations, core up 4% year-over-year, also in line with expectations. The only difference between expectations was the month-over-month change for the headline number, up 0.1% versus estimates of flat. As such, no major changes in expectations for the FOMC meeting tomorrow with that interest rate decision coming. Markets are saying there's a little bit of a possibility of an increase, but largely expecting a continuation of a rate pause and then eventual rate cuts sometime around March or May next year. So any reaction to that FOMC meeting tomorrow will mostly be, I think, determined based off of what the statement says and what Fed Chair Jerome Powell says in the press conference afterwards. All right, let's start off with some China data here. We have updated insured vehicle numbers for the last week. This is for December 4th through the 10th. And the numbers did decline a little bit week over week, but still a very nice number, 15,400 vehicles from Tesla insured. Again, this was only about 3,000 Model 3s. We know weekly production on the Model 3 has been well above that level, so Tesla mostly exporting those at the moment. We'll see if that changes in the last few weeks. But this now puts the quarter through 10 weeks at about 120,000 vehicles insured, continuing to improve the trend versus prior quarters. This is up 7% from Q3 quarter to date, 36% from Q2, and 8% from Q1. With 3 weeks left in the quarter, Tesla has about 40,000 vehicles to go to set a quarterly insured vehicle record. So about 13,000 per week. Based on how the last few weeks have come in, that certainly seems possible, plus the potential upside of higher Model 3 numbers. And remember, Tesla had previously announced that the Model Y standard range version was sold out for the rest of the year. So depending on Tesla's export strategy for the Model Y, it looks like the strength in those numbers could continue as well. So nice insured vehicle numbers for Tesla in China. I did also want to return to the wholesale and retail sales as well as production for China. We had talked about a report of production previously. I now have had a chance to verify that report. So Giga Shanghai production for November was indeed 90,800 vehicles, a record for Giga Shanghai all time. That's fantastic to see. And then I do now have the precise split between Model 3 and Model Y. The Model 3 number was a little bit lower, Model Y a little bit higher than the estimates previously. So a bit over 32,000 for the Model 3, a little bit over 58,000 for the Model Y. For the Model 3, we had previously thought the number was going to be a record production number for the Model 3. It didn't quite hit that. November last year was just a couple hundred units higher, but very close, and still a tremendous number, of course, this close to the refresh of the Model 3. We've also got the split between Model 3 and Model Y filled in there for retail or domestic sales and exports, but no major surprises there as we've had a pretty good feel for that from the insured vehicle numbers. All right, next up, we've got a story on autopilot and specifically Tesla pushing back on a media report from the Washington Post around autopilot. So a little bit of public relations efforts from Tesla, something a lot of people have asked for since this has not been a focus for Tesla in recent years. And those efforts have varied over time. But in this case, Tesla pushing back and providing a lot of details against this Washington Post report. So for those that didn't see this, this was a couple of days ago. Probably something we normally would have covered. There's not really anything new in it, but I actually have to admit that I didn't even see it until Tesla had posted this. Good example of a little bit of the Streisand effect there. But again, in my opinion, not really news from the Washington Post, more of an opinion piece about autopilot and some restrictions that they seem to be in favor of or suggesting should be enforced upon Tesla, particularly around drivers having the ability to choose when or when not to operate autopilot. So as we have seen done countless times now over the years, the article highlights instances of crashes that had autopilot associated with them. They highlight one in particular, I think mostly an attempt to drum up emotion. Obviously, any car crash is going to be something that is potentially devastating, very sad situation, no matter what the circumstances are. So they write about that, and then they say what seems to be the essence of the article, writing, quote, "In all, the Post has identified about 40 fatal or serious crashes since 2016 involving Tesla's driver assistance software. The bulk of them were identified through NHTSA's data, and the rest surfaced through lawsuits. Many occurred on controlled access highways, but at least 8 occurred on roads where autopilot was not designed to be used," end quote. Again, the argument seems to be around that, saying that because these crashes occurred, there should be enforcement on autopilot being able to be activated or not being able to be activated in certain circumstances, which of course is already the case, but they present it in a way that suggests it should be more heavily enforced, more restricted. As usual with these types of articles, there is very little thought given to trying to normalize data or to provide any sort of a counterpoint at all. So Tesla stepping in and giving a bit of the other side of the story on X. Tesla highlights some of the autopilot safety statistics that they have shared over the years. We've talked about those many times. I think those are inconclusive because they don't seem to control for the type of driving that autopilot is handling versus the general crash rate for all vehicles, various things like that. So it's helpful to have that context, but it's not an inarguable point on Tesla's side. I think more admissible in this instance are some details that Tesla shared about this crash that the Washington Post was highlighting, which comes from court testimony. They say the driver later testified in the litigation he knew autopilot didn't make the car self-driving and he was the driver, contrary to the Post, and Angulo claims that he was misled, over-reliant, or complacent. He readily and repeatedly admitted, "I was highly aware that it was still my responsibility to operate the vehicle safely," and he agreed it was his responsibility as the driver of the vehicle, even with autopilot activated, to drive safely and be in control of the vehicle at all times. There is this persistent attempt to frame crashes like this as the responsibility of Tesla, as though drivers are getting into these cars that are just using basic autopilot and somehow assuming that they are fully autonomous, which I don't recall ever hearing one time a driver say that they thought that, because even if you overlook the numerous warnings that Tesla gives that clarifies those details, it's just obvious. Now, full self-driving is a little bit different, but again, here we're talking about just basic autopilot. Anyway, finally, Tesla highlights that the Post also failed to disclose that autopilot restricted the vehicle speed to 45 miles per hour, in this case, the speed limit, based on the road type, but the driver was pressing the accelerator to maintain 60 miles per hour when he ran the stop sign and caused the crash. Of course, when you're doing that, Tesla shows a warning on the screen that says autopilot will not brake because the accelerator is pressed. So finding Tesla responsible for this, I don't understand that train of thought. In general, it boils down to how much regulation there should be on technology. If technology can be possibly misused in a way that is harmful, should nobody get to use that technology anymore? Because if that's the case, well, we have to say goodbye to a lot of the things that we use every day. Anyway, at this point, I think it's a topic that has been sufficiently beaten to death, but I am glad to see that Tesla is putting in the effort to provide some counterpoints to articles like this. All right, moving on from that, we've got some further coverage of a reported whistleblower from back in May when the Handelsblatt had reported that a former Tesla service technician in Norway had passed over 100 gigabytes of data that this person had saved down from Tesla, with the opinion that much of this data was too widely accessible within the organization. Since then, I think even before the whistleblower came out, but certainly since, Tesla has implemented changes within their data policies, but nevertheless, this is showing up again today from a report from the Telegraph, which says that the whistleblower has written the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK warning that personnel in China or Russia could access the data, creating a quote-unquote significant security risk. Tesla is believed to have restricted access since. Telegraph also says they could not confirm claims that employees in China had access to employee data. I don't think I have much more to add to this other than kind of just passing it along as an update. I don't think we have any way to confirm accuracy or not, or whether or not it was taken advantage of, if accurate. But in general, since this data was handed over, I would have to expect that Tesla has pretty thoroughly reviewed this type of access and put much better controls in place if necessary, but that's just my assumption. All right, next up, we've got a few quick ones. This one from The Verge. One of their reporters had exchanged a couple of text messages with one of the first owners of the Cybertruck, Alexis Ohanian, who had taken delivery at the delivery event. So the reporter asked, "How's the Cybertruck?" And Alexis said, "Handles even better than my ex. Feels like I'm driving the APC from Aliens. Plenty of room for my two kids, my two 100-pound dogs. Love it. As a big fella, this is the first car that really feels comfortable to me." I think I read that he is around 6'5", so certainly bigger than most. The reporter then also asked, "How's the windshield wiper?" And Alexis said, "Massive," in all caps. No surprise to see positive comments from an early owner. They're likely to be quite supportive, but still nice to hear some of those initial thoughts and specifics about what he is enjoying. Next, we've got a new country for Tesla. Tesla has announced that they have opened the configurator for Tesla vehicles in Qatar. This isn't going to be a huge market for Tesla. There's only tens of thousands of vehicles sold in Qatar each year. So nothing too significant there, but an expansion nonetheless. We also had a quick post from Tesla's Megapack account on X today saying, "Congratulations, Megapack team, on 12 gigawatt hours of operating industrial storage at 99% availability." We know how important uptime or availability is for Tesla across their product lines, particularly with the Supercharger network, which also has a greater than 99% availability. Nice to see those kind of figures extending to Megapack as well. Finally, today on the battery front, Panasonic has announced a partnership with Sila Nanotechnologies to purchase their next generation nanocomposite silicon anode material for EV batteries. Silicon anodes, as you may remember from Tesla talking about it at Battery Day or on other occasions, offers the potential for improved energy density in battery cells, but presents a degradation challenge as silicon is more prone to cracking than what might otherwise be the anode with graphite. So Panasonic has used a little bit of silicon for years, but they are saying that the high-performance silicon material supplied by Sila outperforms conventional silicon by offering higher capacity as well as suppressing expansion during charging. Not a whole lot else shared in the announcement specifically. Panasonic just says to achieve a 25% increase in battery energy density from the current levels of 800 watt-hours per liter to 1000 watt-hours per liter by 2031, it is essential to incorporate next-generation silicon materials in its battery development. I don't think they're saying that's all that would be required, just that that would be one of the components that would help get to that level of improvement. All right, that is where we'll wrap it up for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on X at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday, December 13th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.